Welcome to episode 501 of the Divine Intervention Podcasts. In today's podcast, we're going to be addressing a topic I title Common Sense for 2024. Common Sense for 2024. This is a podcast I think you're going to find to be profoundly helpful for every level. And this is pretty much going to be a guide for medical students and residents. And just as a quick shout out, if you know you're taking your USMLE exams soon, I have a class that actually starts today. It's a step one class. It runs from today to Saturday, but it's not just for step one. It's also for complex one. Or if you're preparing for step two or step three or complex two and three, and you want a very strong foundation for those exams, this class will be exactly what you need. And then next week, I have a series of classes starting on Thursday with a test-taking course. That's for step one to step three. On Friday, I have a biostats class, also for step one to step three. On Saturday, I have a social sciences and ethics class for step one to step three. And then the week after that, I have a 20-hour class for step two, complex two, step three, complex three. So if you're interested in any of those classes, just shoot me an email. They're all over Zoom, and I can give you some more information. Okay, so let's just jump right into it. So, common sense for 2024, right? Obviously, Happy New Year. I was really glad that we were able to hit episode 500 last year. But now we're in a new year. Last year is gone. 2023 is in the rearview mirror. But now, what are some things you should be doing right now? How can you structure your year so that you can get a lot out of it? How can you structure your year so you can succeed and prosper in this year? I'm going to arrange this podcast in a certain way. I'm going to literally start from first year of medical school. So like, oh, if you're an M1, this is what you should be doing. If you're an M2, this is what you should be doing. M3, M4. Then I'll go into residency. But for residency, I'll stop at year 3. Because many residencies are 3 years long. But honestly, if you're a resident and you're in the 7-year things like neurosurgery, for example, you're still going to find this to be profoundly helpful. So honestly, even if you're a resident, even the stuff I tell medical students in this podcast, you're going to find it to be helpful. So let's just get right into it. So first year, what are you supposed to be doing your first year of medical school? Your first year of medical school is for deep learning. I'm going to say that again. You heard me right. Deep learning. In fact, I know as I make this podcast, I'm making this right now, like January 8th, 2024. A bunch of you have at least probably finished the first half of your first year. If you pretty much wasted that first half, I will strongly encourage you, get your act together in this second half. Literally, get your act together. One thing that many people don't realize is that your entire medical career, your success on board exams, your success with residency, your success as a third-year student is built now, early, right? Many people ignore the importance of a good foundation. And the benefit that you have going for you now is that you don't have a board exam coming up right now. You have like so much time before you have to take your board exams. So because you have that so much time, a wise thing you can do right now is to learn slowly and deeply. Slowly and deeply. It requires a lot of dedication. It requires a lot of time. It requires a lot of effort, but it's something you need to start doing. If you didn't do it last year, do it this year. That's the truth, right? Like a very smart way to go about this is get a copy of First Aid. As we know, First Aid has a lot of facts. Doesn't necessarily have the most context with it, although it's a phenomenal book. So you may want to say, you know what, as I'm going through my different rotation, as I'm going through my different blocks, I will read through First Aid, and then I will use like a board study resource, learn the material well. So your job now is not to memorize things. No, just learn it well. That's all you need to do. Literally, learn it well. As you learn it well, then annotate into your First Aid. Now, please be careful. Don't annotate stuff from your lectures into First Aid. It's only if it's directly applicable to what is in First Aid, because unfortunately, many medical schools, they go over a lot of stuff that has like no board exam worthiness. So you don't want to make your First Aid become an unconscionable book to read. You certainly do not want that. So annotate things from like a board's resource into first aid, right? And again, don't annotate too much. I don't know. I just feel like people go on extremes. Honestly, even the Bible talks about like, man, people that go on extremes, it's not wise. Just do a reasonable amount of annotation to where you're like, okay, first aid will almost read like a textbook to me come when I'm taking my exam, right? So that's just like a smart thing to keep at the back of your mind, right? First year, and honestly, this advice also applies for second year, deep learning. Learn things slowly, but learn it well that first time. I'm telling you, this is probably one of the smartest decisions I took for my life, and it helped me tremendously going forward to this very day. Some of the things you see me being able to explain very well right now are things I learned well the first time when I was a medical student, where I was a first-year medical student at Hopkins. So I will strongly encourage you, deep learning. Now, what is another thing? So really, this advice I'm giving honestly just applies for first and second year. So I'm just going to merge both together. One other thing you should also be doing is find research. Find research. You'd be amazed at the number of medical students that wait until it's too late in the process before they start finding research. To be honest with you, even if you think you're going into an uncompetitive specialty, which that is slowly becoming a dying breed, right? Like many of the disciplines, and I'm not going to mention any discipline, but many of the disciplines that we used to think before that, man, you don't need research. What was true years ago is no longer true right now. There are some disciplines where people thought that, oh, you could literally sleepwalk your way into those residencies. That's not really a thing anymore, especially with the way ERAS is now set up and the way the match is now set up and the increased competition, right? There's just more people applying for residency today than there were even just 3 years ago. That's the truth. So I will strongly encourage you, seek out research. Don't wait till third year. You see some people, they start researching their third year. No, that is not wise. Start it early. Third year, you may not have as much time to do quality research. And the thing is, if you are doing a lot of research in your third year, your studying for your shelf exams is going to suffer and you're going to pay a price for it. So honestly, if you're kind of wondering, man, like Divine, what are some things I should do with my first 2 years? Honestly, deep learning, annotate into your first aid, and research. Those are the two things you should be doing, right? Extracurriculars, that's a good time to also latch onto that, right? Your first 2 years of med school, extracurriculars, very, very smart thing to do, right? Because again, the amount of time that you have control over is going to diminish progressively as you progress in your career in medicine. You're going to have less control over your time as a third year. You're going to have even less control over your time as a resident. So those things that require you to be prudent with your time and employ big chunks of your time to get those things done. Get those things done in your first and your second year of medical school. Again, I know some of this seems like hokey pokey advice, but I promise you, if you don't follow this advice, you will pay a price at some point. You may not pay it now, but I can almost assure you, just give yourself a few years. You know, by the time like 2026, 2025, 2027 hits, you're going to be paying a pretty steep price for ignoring this advice. So those are the things you should be focusing on in your first 2 years of medical school. Another thing you should also focus on in your first 2 years of medical school is building up your physical exam skills. Building up your physical exam and patient interview skills. I'm going to say that again. Building up your physical exam and your patient interview skills. Many medical schools, at least in the US, they have many programs that they run that will pretty much force you to become good at these things. Take those things seriously, right? Like at least know the basics of like the cardiovascular exam, the respiratory exam, the neurological exam, the abdominal exam, the extremity exam, the skin exam. Know those basic things. Have just a basic approach. Honestly, this is a good time to build up basic approaches to things, right? Basic approaches to interviewing patients, basic approaches to interviewing kids, basic approaches to doing certain physical exams. Oh, giving this presentation, what physical exam maneuvers should I do? These are things you should be building up in your first 2 years. But honestly, that's pretty much my advice for the first 2 years. There's many other things you can be doing. I have no issues with that. But honestly, the critical things, research, deep learning, extracurriculars, physical exams, patient interview skills, that's your big focus. Okay, now let's get to third year. What are you supposed to do with your third year of medical school? That's a great question. So your third year of medical school, obviously you're going to be doing a lot of rotations. You're going to be doing a lot of rotations. Okay, so what do you want to do with your third year of medical school? The thing you want to do with your third year of medical school is, again, number one, study for your shelf exams. I'm going to say that again. Study for your shelf exams. You may be like, man, Divine, why didn't you start off with build your clinical skills, blah, 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 blah. Well, here's why. The reason I'm saying study for your shelf exams is that many things flow from studying for your shelf exams. You see many people, they go into 30 and they're like, oh, you know what? I'm going to learn everything on the words and I'm going to just focus on improving my patient care skills. The thing is, unfortunately, those things may not necessarily control how good your grades are. The thing is, it's better to build those things from the place of studying for your shelf exams. What are some of the benefits of studying for your shelf exams? Number one, you're going to crush your shelf exams. Number two, you're going to answer your PIM questions very accurately. That's the truth. Number three, you're going to be very good at clinical care. I kid you not. People that are great physicians have good knowledge bases. The thing is, the more you know, the more comprehensively and the more accurately and the more astutely you can take care of your patients. Many people ignore this fact. They think that, oh, again, this is just Divine selling some snake oil. But it's not. I kid you not. It's very important. Many people that struggle clinically, most times, check their knowledge base, is terrible. That's the truth. Most people that struggle clinically have very awful knowledge bases. So that's not something you want to be your testimony with your third year. First and foremost, study for your shelf exams. And let me tell you this. The best predictor of your performance on step two is your performance on your shelf exams. I'm going to say that again. The best predictor of your performance on step two is your performance on your shelf exams. The people that you see that are getting in the 90s, in the high 80s on their shelf exams, you can almost pencil it in that they're probably going to get in the 250s or in the 260s or thereabouts on their step two exams. Again, I'm not saying for sure, but it's highly likely that that's going to be their outcome, right? If you see them consistently have those grades throughout their third year, right? So learn. Learn this material and learn it well, right? Go through a QBank. Pick UWorld. UWorld is an excellent QBank. Go through that QBank. Oh, Divine, how can I study for each shelf exam? I have many podcasts I've made on these things. How do I use dedicated periods? I have many podcasts I've made on these things. Check out episode 447. But honestly, like, just check out my website. There are so many things I have. I have like many shelf review videos. I have many podcasts. I have many things that I've done, right, that you can use to learn for these things, right? And also have many review courses that I offer that many people find to be profoundly helpful that can also help you achieve success on these exams, right? So study for your shelf exams. And then the second thing I'm going to say is start developing algorithms. I'm going to say that again. Start developing algorithms. What do I mean by start developing algorithms? By start developing algorithms, I mean start developing like an approach you use for things like note-taking, things like pre-rounding, things like rounding, things like discharge summaries, things like admissions, things like transfers. Start having written templates for these things. Literally, type it up. Have it somewhere. I promise you, maybe like, Divine, why am I going through all this stress for my third year? Honestly, this is something that will help you, not just for your third year, but it's going to help you as a resident as well. I kid you not, many of the approaches that I used as a resident in interviewing patients, blah, 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 these were all things I picked up during my time as a medical student. I kid you not, especially during my internal medicine rotation. So I'll strongly encourage you, have these templates because it will make you more efficient with patient care. I'm telling you, when you have an approach, when you have an algorithm, when you have a pattern that you follow, when you have a checklist that you follow, it's going to make you extremely efficient. It's going to make you extremely accurate because many times speed and accuracy don't go together. But a person that works with checklists is able to combine speed and accuracy, able to combine speed and accuracy. Okay. Now, what is another thing you need to be doing as a third year? As a third year, you need to be planning for your step two exam, right? And I guess I forgot this for the first and second year folks, right? Obviously, you're going to be taking your step one exam, right? Plan for that. Plan all your dedicated period and stuff like that, right? It's kind of makes sense, right? But for people that are third year medical students, I strongly encourage you, plan for step two. And please, plan to take step two before the end of what? July. I'm going to say that again. Plan to take step two, why? Before the end of July. I'm going to tell you this right off the bat. do not apply for residency if you don't have a step two score. I mean, you can apply. Obviously, I'm not going to hold you back. But what are your chances of you getting any kind of interview? They're almost zero. I kid you not. They're almost what? Zero. If you don't have a step two score. Right? Back in the day, and again, back in the day, it was like as recently as 3, 4, maybe 5 years ago. You could take step two during like November of the year you're applying for medical for residency. And it's not a problem. You'll still get some interviews. You know, they're like, oh, okay, when you get your step two scores, update us. But I'm telling you, one of the quickest ways to DOA your application or DNR your application immediately is just having no step two score, right? So you see people, again, that's just the thing. If you plan, many of the problems that people face and struggle and stress through, you won't have to deal with any of those things. So plan. So since you, if you have a plan, then it can make you start studying well ahead of time, right? Please don't wait till September to take your step two exam. No. You see some people, they are like, well, that's one thing that really boggles me sometimes when I hear this question from people. Oh, Divine, what is the last possible date I could take step two so that my scores could come out on time for ERAS? See, those are words of a person that is irresponsible. That's the truth. Those are literally words of a person, of an individual that is absolutely irresponsible. You should not be depending on, ooh, the last possible time my scores will come out for you to whip yourself into shape and study for your exam, right? Why don't you go through things? See, many of the things, many people say med school is stressful, stressful, stressful. Don't get me wrong. I see why that can be the case. Med school is stressful. But I kid you not, most of the stressors that people encounter in med school, in residency, and in life is from a failure to plan. I'm going to say that again. Most of the stressors that people encounter from med school, residency, and life is from a failure to plan. From a failure to plan. From a failure to plan. Don't be that kind of person. I'm telling you, your life will be way less stressful and your risk of mental health crisis will be quite significantly reduced if you just planned out your life and did things on an early schedule. Don't wait till the last minute. Literally, don't wait till the last minute. I kid you not. My step two exam, I took it like very early in the summer before ERAS had even went out. So I didn't have all these stresses. Like I already had my scores. Like I had a score in hand asking people for recommendation letters. I had a score in hand for many things already, right? But you see people, they wait till like, ooh, late August, early September, last possible day to take the exams. And then they're like, wow, okay, maybe some program director at their home institution wants to speak to them and say, oh, let's talk about your application. See if you're competitive for this year. Oh, have you taken step two? Oh, I'm taking it in September. They don't have any score to assess you with, right? And that's one thing you don't realize. If there are other people in your cohort in that same med school that are trying to get into that same specialty that have scores, who do you think the program director at your home institution is going to grant interviews to? Who do you think is going to take more seriously? It's going to take those people that have taken their exams and have scores in hand. So please, take your exams on time. It's better to take your exam, to schedule your exam very early and, ooh, okay, I have to postpone it till like August or something because I don't feel prepared, than to schedule your exam right off the bat for a very late period in the cycle. That is not smart. I kid you not. I kid you not. If you don't have a step two score before ERAS goes out, the, you know, like, oh, programs can start downloading your application. Again, I'm telling you, your chance of getting an interview, even if you're from a U.S. medical school, is very low. And your chance of matching is extremely low as well, right? So plan now, right? January, oh, Divine. See, one principle I found that really helps me in my life is I try to ring the alarm early. It's better to ring the alarm early than to ring the alarm late. Ring the alarm in your life early. It's better to start stressing about those things now than to wait till the summer and start stressing about those things. Okay, now what's another thing you should be doing as a third-year medical student now, right? What's the common sense? Because again, many of you that are third years right now, you've gone through half of your third year. What are some things you should be doing right now? Arrange your away rotations. Arrange your away rotations. I cannot tell you how many medical students wait till like May to start arranging aways. And then at that point, they're getting the bottom of the barrel or they're getting away rotations at inopportune times. You see some people, they're like, man, Divine, I couldn't find anything for June, for July, for August, for September. So you see them, they're stuck doing away rotations in the month of November when the application cycle is well underway. Don't you think it's better for you to plan your schedule, get those aways now when there is not much competition from other medical students, and then you do it at an opportune time, you get recommendation letters even before ERAS goes out. And the thing is, some of these away rotations are informal interviews from the program you go to, right? But you see people, I don't know, people like to wait for things when there is much more competition. No, that's not the smart way to go about life. Be a value investor with your life. Let me say it again. Be a value investor with your life. For those of you that have a background in finance or the stock market, you understand what I'm talking about, right? You go for things when no one is doing them. You step away when everyone is doing something, right? So why don't you arrange your way rotations now when everyone is not seeking for those? Why don't you arrange for recommendation letters? That's the next thing I want to talk about. Recommendation letters. Why don't you start arranging for them where the rush is not too much? But you see people, they wait till July or August to start asking for rec letters. But that person, they're asking for rec letters in August. The competition is fierce. Like 30 people have asked that same person for rec letters. So what's going to happen? Well, the person, to fulfill the needs of the 30, the person will have to write like a crappy recommendation letter. It will not be as good. It will not be as thorough. It will not be as well thought out. Versus if you ask the person now, you'll be the only person on their plate. They can write their best work and give you a good letter. I'm telling you, the more people ask a person for a letter, the worse the quality is over time, right? So just plan your life. Plan your step two date. Get your rec letters. Get all your docs, set them out now. I'm telling you, if you do those things, you notice that the ERAS process is very mellow, right? Like for me, when I hear people say that, wow, it's the night before ERAS is due, and they're like sweating bullets. I'm like, what are you doing with your life? There are some people that literally, the way they live their lives, you can almost tell what the outcome will be. It's sad to say, but it's true. You see them, you had all of the year, but you're like, gee, wait, I'm going to wait till the night before to get all these things sorted out. And you see these posts on Reddit, and you see people telling these people Godspeed, No, you should be chastising those people because those people are foolish. They are not fools, but their behavior is foolish. Their behavior is foolish. Don't leave things for the last... I just don't get it. I don't understand why people will leave things for the last minute, right? It's very commonplace. That's why you see I titled this podcast Common Sense. Common sense is not very common. And many people lack the most basic levels of common sense. Again, I feel very sad saying this, but it's true. It is absolutely true, right? So just plan out your life, right? Like when ERAS comes out, like in June, why don't you start feeling... See, let me tell you this. You're a third-year medical student. Once ERAS comes out, spend 5 minutes a day on it. Just see, 5 minutes. 5 minutes a day. If you spend 5 minutes a day, by the end of July, you've crafted this gorgeous personal statement. You've checked off all the programs you're applying to. You've filled in all the information. You've answered all the essay questions. You've filled in all your experiences. That's a smart thing to do. And here's the thing. If you do those things well, then when your school is asking for comments for the MSPE and whatnot, because you've already filled out your ERAS application comprehensively, you already know what to tell them so that the MSPE that you're giving them matches perfectly with what is in your ERAS application, right? So I'm encouraging you, please, 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 make your life easy. Make your life easy. Make your life easy, right? As a third year, start coming up with the criteria for where you would want to be for residency, because that will inform the kinds of programs that you apply to. Although, with how fiercely competitive the process is now, I tell people apply to as many programs as you can afford. Right. And then obviously in your third year, you do these things, you set yourself up nicely for success. Okay. Now, one thing I want to say about third year is don't do away rotations if you don't have to. Right. There are certain disciplines where, especially if you have like strong scores, you have solid research, you've done a very solid rotation at your school, you probably don't need away rotations. I feel like sometimes people just do away rotations because it's like the fun thing to do. Or it's like, wow, they want to really set themselves apart. But there are some disciplines where an away rotation doesn't really set you apart that much differently from a person that just did not do an away rotation. And again, if you want consulting on all these things, you can always shoot me an email. I do meet people one-on-one at a rate, and we can talk through some of these things. Okay, so fourth year, right? Let's go to fourth year. What are you supposed to be doing as a fourth year medical student? Well, the first half of fourth year of med school is tough. The second half is amazing. The first half, tough. Second half, amazing. Why is the first half tough? Well, you're going to be going for interviews. You're going to be doing away rotations. You're going to be getting the final parts of your application together, right? Get a suit, right? Get good dress, like one or two sets of clothes that you can use for interviews. That's a smart thing to do, right? And the thing I will also say you should be doing as a fourth year is, especially when you get to the second half, right? So like now, for most people, start preparing for step three. Start preparing for step three. Oh, Divine, you're such an intense guy. Come on. Well, if you listen to a podcast I made a few weeks ago, you'll understand why studying for step three and getting it done as quickly as you can is a smart play, right? What do you want to do? Again, don't do anything crazy. I'm not saying, wow, put in hours and hours every day studying for step three. No, that's not what Divine is saying. What Divine is saying is that, see, spend like 30 minutes a day or an hour a day gently studying for step three. Get the URLQ bank for step three. Start practicing the CCS cases. Refresh on the material from your shelf exams. Just go through those things, right? Go through those things so that when you graduate, because you cannot even apply for step three until you've literally graduated from med school. But once you are walking at graduation, the day after, put in that application so that you can get step three done as quickly as possible. Why? The material from your third year is still fresh in your head. Because when you get in residency, trust me, I can't tell you how many times I've heard this story. Oh, Divine, I will study in residency. I will study so hard in residency. And that study so hard time never comes. Why? Because you see some people, when they become residents, depending on what you go into, your time is completely gone. You start a family, you do all these things. You notice that, gee, I don't have time to do many of these things I thought I'll have time to do. So again, be wise. Don't be foolish, right? Make your life simple. Now, the third thing I'm going to say about fourth year is you need to start becoming more and more realistic with your life. Start becoming what? More and more realistic with your life. More and more what? Realistic with your life. The thing is, the first 3 years of med school, people have this very romanticized, unrealistic view of the realities of life, right? So the thing is, when you become a fourth year, start becoming more and more realistic with your life. Like, for example, like, okay, let's be reasonable. Like, where do I want to go for residency, right? Let's say you've interviewed at a bunch of places, and you're like, okay, where am I going for residency? I need to start getting my finances in order, kind of deal. Okay, like, do I want to be close to family? Do I already have kids? Because I'm telling you, as a resident, childcare is very important, because trust me, you will need it. So like, should I stay close to my family? Okay, maybe the place close to your family may not be like the creme de la crop residency, but it's decent. These are all considerations you should start having. These are all what? Considerations you should start having. And then another thing I'm going to say about fourth year is, this is a time, if you're a person that uses marijuana, to go ahead and shut it down. Go ahead and shut it down. Here's why. Here's why. Here's why. Oh, Divine, come on. Let me explain why. There are many reasons. But there's a very practical reason. I'm going to limit myself to that because I'm not a politician. This is not a space where I'm going to be talking about political issues. That's not my cup of tea, right? I'm sure there are many podcasts you can listen to on that stuff. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. The day you march for residency, one of the first things I can almost promise you're going to do within that first week is you're going to submit yourself to a urine drug test. Many residencies do this. And any state in the country, they'll have a place that they prescribe that you go for a background check. And one of the things they're going to do, they're going to get your urine. You know that marijuana can stay in a person's urine for 30 days or more in some cases. So if you're a person that uses weed, shut that down right now. Because again, I'm not saying things out of a lack of experience. I'm saying things that I've literally seen with my eyes. You hear this unfortunate story, few people every year. They get drug tested. Marijuana is found in your urine. And then the residency spot they got that they've worked for years, all this undergrad, MCAT, step one, step two, everything, they lose that spot. They lose that spot. You don't want to be in that kind of situation, right? So if you're a weed user, shut it down. Shut it down so that it's completely out of your system. So when you get a urine drug screen, you're not found guilty. You're not put in trouble. Oh, Divine, my state legalizes marijuana. My state legalizes marijuana. Okay, good luck to you, right? Good luck to you. Remember, you're not going to be working for a state. You're going to be working for a hospital system, right? At some point, you need to stop being a child and start becoming an adult, right? Again, that's why I titled this Common Sense. This is me just literally pouring out my heart to you guys that are listening to this podcast. Okay, to you guys and gals that are listening to this podcast. Okay. So, so we're done with fourth year of medical school. All right. So, residency, first year. All right. What are you supposed to be doing as a first year resident? See, to be honest with you, if you're a resident, or you're a medical student about to start residency, one of the smartest things you can do, listen to my podcast on, I think it's called Avoiding Trouble in Residency. I'm pretty sure it's a podcast I made fairly recently. Avoiding Trouble in Residency. Avoiding Trouble in Residency. I think it's something that you'll find to be very helpful. I think actually it's episode 497 on my website, episode 497. It's literally titled Avoiding Trouble in Residency and Medical School. Check that podcast out. It has so many wonderful tips for residency. But just brief overview. What should you be doing as a first year resident? Well, early in your first year, take step three. Take step three. I'm telling you, don't wait. You see somebody, they'll say, oh, I'll take it like in the second half of my first year. No, I'm telling you, your responsibilities will only increase as residency continues. The expectations of you will only increase as residency continues. When you start residency, that is the period of lowest expectations for you. That is the period of probably the most amount of time for you, right? Use that time, study for step three, take it and get it out of the way. Put that in your rearview mirror. Be done with the USMLEs forever. Be done with Comlex forever. So you don't have to deal with any of these things. Get it out of your way. I'm telling you, I graduated from medical school close to the end of May. I took step three close to the end of July of the year I graduated from med school. And that thing served me well. It served me well. Make your life simple. Get it out of the way. Because that knowledge atrophy of the stuff from med school is exponential once residency starts, right? So get that thing sorted out. Now, the second thing I'm going to say is, if possible, so this is something that you should only do if possible, start paying down your debt. Start paying down your med school loans. Start paying down your med school loans. Again, I know this is not always possible for people that live in places like California, right? Or New York, right? That's not always possible. But if it's possible, even if it's $100 you can start paying down, that's future interest that you're saving yourself. Start paying down your loans if you can. Start paying down your loans if you can. And then another thing you really want to try to do, and this also applies to second years, but honestly, this is something you should really shoot for in your first year. Try to get a license. Try to get a state license, like a full unrestricted state license. You know, in many places, this is something you can only get after you're done with your first year. But most places as well, you can only get this if you've taken your step three exam. Right? So the earlier you can get this done, the better. The earlier you can get this done, the better. Especially for people that are doing like prelim years or transitional years. Many of these residencies you're going on to, like radiology or anesthesia or opto or whatever, they allow their residents to moonlight. But quite a number of programs, the requirement for moonlighting is a full-on restricted medical license for that state that you're a resident in. So try to get that license. And you, again, maybe like, Divine, can't I just like apply and get it anytime? No, you cannot. You absolutely cannot. There are some states where getting a license, the whole process takes like 6 months to a year, right? Especially like Texas, for example, I think is a pretty long drawn out process, right? But I will say that just in general, get this process squared away. Start it as early as you can, as early as you can, as early as you can, so you can get that license in time. Because I'm telling you, moonlighting can make you a lot of extra money, right? So get that license. And the thing is, many times residency programs will pay for that license for you, because that process is not cheap. Sometimes it can be more than $1,000, right? So many residencies offer to pay for that. So just might as well take advantage of that. And then the other thing I'm going to say is, as a first year resident, again, a lot of these things I'm saying, you're going to find them in episode 497. So I'm going to kind of gloss over them. Study for your in-training exams. I kid you not. Study for your in-training exams. Your goal should be to do what? Crush your in-training exam. Because I'm telling you, for many people, their in-training exams performing poorly on them is the beginning of many sorrows in residency. Many sorrows, I kid you not, in residency, right? So study for your in-training exams. Study for your in-training exams, right? And the thing is, again, what is one of the best predictors of success on your board exams? Just like, oh, wow, doing well on your shelf exams is the best predictor of success on step two. Well, guess what? Doing well on your in-training exams is one of the best predictors of success on your board exams, right? On your board exams. So study for your study for those things. And I'll also tell you, in first year, your first year of residency, make checklists, right? Now, those checklists are going to be very important to you. Because you're going to use them out. You're not doing the catch-all stuff for med school, right? Like, you know, med school is the time where you're exposed to everything. But now you're in residency. You're literally doing the stuff that you want to do for the rest of your life, right? So you might as well get good at, like, you know, like your job. So I will strongly encourage you, make checklists for things you see a lot in your discipline, right? I kid you not, it'll make your life so simple. And it'll make you a much more effective resident, a much more efficient resident. You will get good evaluations, right? Many people forget this. They think that, oh, wow, evals end in med school. No, evals don't end in med school, right? After every rotation as a resident, you're going to get evaluated, right? So again, make checklists, make approaches to these things. It'll make you a much, much better resident. And the thing is, if you study for your in-training exams, you're also going to do well clinically. When you're attending PIMPSU, because PIMP questions are not just for med students, they're also for residents, you can answer very confidently. You can evaluate patients very accurately, very briskly, very wisely, if you have a good fund of knowledge. Okay, now what should you be doing in your second year of residency? Again, if you've not gotten your license, go ahead and tee that up. Start studying for your board exams. Set up a dedicated study plan. Something that, again, is 30 minutes, right? Again, remember, great things come from small things that are done consistently. Great things come from small things that are done consistently. Start studying for your board exams. Start studying for your board exams. You don't know, I can't tell you how many people fail board exams. And obviously you're going to take it after you're done with residency. But I can't tell you how many people, they fail their board exams and then they have to retake it like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times before they can qualify for it. And the problem with these board exams is they're not administered very often. It's not like the USMLEs that you can take it like almost any time. No, most of these specialty board exams, they're administered like once a year. So you fail it, you're going to wait till the next year. And here's the thing. You may be like, Divine, who cares? You know, I finished residency. You know, I'm going to be making the big bucks. Let me explain why that's going to be a problem for you. Number one, there's a difference between being board certified and being board eligible. People that are board eligible, they don't usually get the best jobs. I'm going to say that right now. Number two, the jobs you're going to get are going to be low-paying jobs. You'll get paid more than you've probably ever earned in your life because you're an attending after residency, but you're going to be getting the low-paying stuff, right? So those things can have some very, especially if you understand what, you know, things like compound interest mean. It can have some very significant financial implications for your future. Okay. And then start looking for a job. Again, it all goes back to this principle of leaving things for the last minute, right? When you're desperate, because the thing is, here's the thing. I've seen this story play out so many times. You see people, they don't bother looking for a job. They're like, oh, I'm a doctor. I can find a job easily. And then they wait till residency is about to end before they start looking for jobs. So because they're desperate, anything that is thrown their way, boom, they grab it because they're like, I need to make money. Because guess what? After you're done with residency, if you have no job lined up, are you still going to be getting a paycheck? No, you're not. You're not. Residency at least gives you a guaranteed paycheck. But once you're done, you're left hanging out in the cold. You ain't got no paycheck. So guess what? Start looking for a job. The wise, smart resident has a job lined up months before residency is over. I kid you not. Months before residency is over. And also, in your second year of residency, again, I'm assuming you're graduating your third year after that, right? Obviously, this advice, titrate it to your circumstances, right? But another thing you should also be keeping in mind is fellowship. So if you know you're applying for fellowship, right, then you want to get this done in your second year, right? And you need to start planning for it in your first year as well, right? Because there are certain fellowships. Let's say you're an IM person and you're trying to go into GI or pulmonary critical care or cardiology or allergy and immunology. You need research in residency. You need experiences in residency. So just kind of like the same advice from med school applies to you, right? Start planning for those things ahead of time, right? And then your third year of residency, right? You should be looking towards taking your board exams the earliest time you can, right? Again, make sure you have a job already lined up. Make sure you have a job already lined up, right? And again, just start thinking more about your future. Start thinking more about your future, right? Start thinking more about your future. Like, you know what? What do I want to do with my future? Where do I want to live? What kind of job am I looking for? Right? Start thinking about your future. Do I want to start a family? Do I want to do this? Do I want to do that? Do I want to do this? I'm not going to talk about all those things. I'm not a personal counselor, right? But start thinking about your future. Okay. So I think that's kind of like the big thing I want to talk about. But I want to say one last thing. Some general things that pretty much apply to anybody, right? First thing I'm going to say here is look for something that gives you meaning outside of medicine. I'm going to say that again. Look for something that gives you meaning outside of medicine. This is one of the sad realities of medicine in the US, but it can be very consuming of a person's life. It can be extremely consuming of a person's life. So, and the thing is, when your life lacks diversity, your risk of mental health crises increases. Your risk of dissatisfaction increases. Your risk of burnout increases. Your risk of just not feeling stable with life increases. Because once medicine, if for whatever reason medicine is taken away from you, you feel completely empty because medicine is the only egg you have in your basket. So find things that give you meaning outside of medicine. Like for me personally, I have many other things outside of my life that give me meaning, right? Many things outside of my life that gives me meaning, right? I have my own personal things. I have my network of people, that gives me meaning. I have my faith. Many of you know I'm a Christian. That gives me meaning. I do a lot of work with my church. That gives me a lot of meaning. Making this podcast gives me a lot of meaning. Making the Divine Intervention Life Lessons podcast gives me a lot of meaning, right? So I have things that bring meaning to my life. Things that are tangible, not just like watching basketball or scrolling on social media. Those things, honestly, most times are pretty meaningless activities. Those things do not really fill that void of wanting to belong to something. So find something that gives you meaning, right? I kid you not. And the thing is, if this is something you prioritize early in med school, it's a habit that you are more likely to stick with. Second thing I'm going to say is work on your mental health. Prioritize mental health. In fact, honestly, I almost wish that people would declare the year 2024 for themselves as the year of good mental health. Take care of yourself. Take care of yourself. Right? Again, medicine can drive a person to the wrong end, especially in this country, right? So take care of yourself. Mental health, things like exercise. If you need more specialized help, speak to someone. Speak to a psychiatrist. Speak to a psychologist. Speak to a counselor, right? Just do things for your wellness. Take care of your wellness in this new year, right? Exercise. Having a good network of friends, like physical network, people you see with your two eyes, not people you see on social media, right? Again, there's a big difference between connections on social media and connections like in the real world, in-person connections, right? So again, pay attention to your mental health. Now, what's the third thing you want to do in this new year that is a smart thing for many people? A smart thing for many people is training your brain to focus. Training your brain to focus. I'm telling you, this is one of these things I think we're going to see become a pandemic in human life as the years go by. But I'm telling you, these days, people just massively struggle with being able to focus, So train your brain, right? I'm telling you, one of the things that has made people lose that ability is the amount of time people spend on social media and on many of these video related applications, right? Like YouTube, TikTok, Snapchat and stuff like that. I'm not disparaging these companies. They clearly have good products, right? But those hours you spend scrolling through, getting those dopamine hits in your brain, oh my goodness, you don't know how you're pretty much ruining yourself, right? So start small and then build your tolerance. So tell yourself, you know what, every day I'm going to start off with 15 minutes of no phones, no screens, nothing. I'm going to pick like a book, something that is worthwhile for like my future, and spend some time reading it. No phones, no screens, no speaking to anybody. And I'm going to sit down. I'm going to engage with that book productively for 15 minutes. And then every week, add like a minute or 2 minutes, right? Try to get to a point where you can really focus for hours on end on one activity with no screens, no social media, no music playing in the background, nothing. Just you and that thing, just focus on it. And then the next thing I'm going to say here is pay attention to your finances. Start building financial skills. Oof. I could almost make a podcast on this. And maybe in the future, I may make a podcast on this. I may, in fact, make a podcast in the future on this. But I'm telling you this, one of the best times to build good financial habits is now. In fact, if you're a first-year medical student and you're listening to this podcast, start building financial habits now. You will thank me later. And again, please, I'm going to put out the disclaimer. All the stuff I'm saying is just my own personal advice. None of this is supposed to be for medical decision-making, not for financial decision-making. Speak with a financial advisor. Speak with your whatever, you know. So please, this is just for educational purposes. That's it. So build good financial habits. Things like budgeting. Things like begin to educate yourself on things like savings, on things like 401k, on retirement accounts, on mortgages, on investment avenues. Start building your knowledge on these things. I'm telling you, when do most physicians start thinking of their finances? When they've graduated from residency. At that point, it is extremely late. I'm not saying you cannot be salvaged, but I'm telling you at that point, it's extremely late. The best time to become financially savvy is before you have money. I'm going to say that again. The best time in your life to become financially savvy is before you have money. If you don't become financially savvy early, you'll be shocked at how set back you will be in life. I kid you not. Because most people in medicine, because they've lived without money for a long time, they don't pay attention to being better with their finances. And then they're like, when I start earning money, I'll get better on my finances. No, those bad habits, those good habits you've not built, right? You'll get in trouble with those, right? Because think about it. You don't have any financial savvy. You don't know anything about savings. You don't know anything about investing. You don't know anything about 401ks and retirement accounts. And then you graduate from residency. Let's say you graduate and you're like an anesthesiologist, for example, right? Your first paycheck is probably going to be like $20,000. That's probably much more money than you've ever seen in your entire life. Wow, 20 grand? Woohoo! You know what? I've not spoiled myself. I've worked hard. Let me go out and get this very fancy car that costs $100,000. You know, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, my next 5 paychecks will cover this thing. And then, I've been living in an apartment. I need to trade up, man. Let me find this very nice part of town and buy this very big home. Now that interest rates are so high and I'm going to be paying like half of my salary in mortgages every month. Right? But what are these people not thinking about? They're not thinking about saving. They're not thinking about investing. Let me tell you this. Many residencies offer retirement accounts that you can sign up for. They'll be taking a small amount out of your paycheck. And sometimes they may even match some of those things. These are things you can start doing to start building up your future. Because again, don't forget the power of compound interest. I think it was Albert Einstein that said this. A person that does not understand compound interest will pay a very, very steep price for it. Literally, you'll pay a very, very, very steep price for it, right? Get these things. Like things like White Coat Investor. It's a website. It's amazing. Many wonderful resources there. Go ahead and check those things out. And again, I may make a podcast on this stuff in the future. But again, I may also not make a podcast on this stuff in the future. Because again, I don't really want to be giving financial advice to a big public audience. Because that can begin to get into the weeds for a lot of people. Okay, so I think I'm going to go ahead and stop here. Again, offer one-on-one tutoring for all the USMLE and COMLEX exams, step 1 to step 3, COMLEX 1 to 3. I have review courses. Again, I have a step 1 COMLEX 1 review course starting in about 4 hours from now. Again, if you're a person taking step 1 or COMLEX 1, or you have a very poor foundation and you're preparing for step 2, step 3, or COMLEX 2 or 3, this class is exactly what you need. I promise you, it's going to help you a lot. And then I offer, again, many other review courses. And in LadyPro/mostofme, I have a 100-hour step 2, step 3, complex 2 and 3 review course. Again, it's a very comprehensive course, extremely helpful. Spaces for that one are much more limited because I want to be able to really invest in the lives of people that are attending. So if you want to sign up for that, shoot me an email and I can give you some more information. And then I have this podcast on Apple, Google and Spotify. I have a YouTube channel, Divine Intervention USMLE Podcast and Videos. And then I have another website called DivineInterventionLifeLessons.com. There's actually an Apple podcast associated with that called the Divine Intervention Life Lessons Podcast. Every week, I post two podcasts that, from a biblical perspective, address a life lesson. So if you're interested, go ahead and check those things out. So I'm going to go ahead and stop here. Again, I know this was a long podcast, but I promise you, this is one of those podcasts. Listen to it. Apply the advice from it. Your life will literally take a turn for the better if you do these things. So I'll see you in episode 502. We're going to go back to the academic side of things in that podcast. But God bless you. Have a wonderful week. Happy New Year. And bye for now. Thank you.